we've seized the power. America.
Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My returning guest after too long an absence is recording artist, singer, and professor at Berklee College of Music, Dee Dee Stewart. And we're going to be talking about an infinity of stars. Dee Dee, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mark.
When I read that title, I thought of Carl Sagan.
Why not?
It was great. Now, this is, and you describe it, these are in your own words, a musical comedy for our unsettled times. Man, you're not trying to reach too high.
Well, yeah. It's contemporary.
Oh, my God. It's like something that's actually needed.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. And I hope, I mean, I feel it's needed because people are in such despair. And that's why it's a comedy. It's, you know, it's all out funny. The idea is to bust people's stress about what's going on and just give them something to laugh about and have a sense of community.
Yeah, and you're right, it's needed. Can you imagine doing like a serious downer of a musical right now? It's like...
No, I would have probably wanted to slit my wrist.
Seriously, I'm so glad that you came up with this. Now, you got to give me the whole history of this.
Okay,
this came out of COVID?
Yes, in fact, it started I started it in March 2020.
Oh, wow.
There's a long story behind it, but I actually got COVID in March 2020.
Oh, man.
Before the vaccine. And so...
don't go over this quickly.
Okay.
How sick were you?
Very.
Oh, my God, Dee Dee.
Yeah, well, I didn't have to go to the hospital, but the long and short of it is that I called my doctor when I got the positive, and I couldn't believe it. I was probably one of the first 1,000 people in Massachusetts get it. And I have no idea how, but, you know, we were still teaching, and they gave us 3 days to finish everything up and go online, and that's when it happened. But it wasn't anybody's fault. But I, you know, had about a week of being completely... hallucinating from fever.
Wow.
And that's when I came up with this.
Excellent story.
Yeah. So I started writing it almost immediately, and over the entire course of the first 2 years of the pandemic, I was working on it.
Now, did it come out of another body of work that you had done previously?
It started out that way. I had done a review like just weeks before COVID, really in January 2019. And it was just, you know, a bunch of songs strung together, but there was sort of a political theme behind it. But it didn't have an actual script. And I was told at that time by friends who worked on Broadway, you know, you can't do a review anymore. You have to have a book. And I thought, well, that's not going to happen. I don't have the time. And suddenly I had the time.
Suddenly everybody had a lot of time.
Yeah. So I made good use of that time, and it kept me from going crazy.
Now, talk to me about writing in a musical comedy. Now, as a person who cannot write one jot of a musical comedy, I look at that and I say, that's a really difficult thing to do. First of all, comedy is difficult to do, and then you put music in it, and it just seems to become incredibly difficult.
Well, yeah, you know, it's like childbirth. When you're on the other end of it, you don't remember the pain. And there was a lot. I mean, it was hard work, but it focused me, and I was very grateful to have it. But it was also a hell of a lot of fun. I mean, writing. Humor is subjective, and I have no idea whether people are going to laugh or not, but I know that I chortled my way through the whole thing.
So,
but I had to get rid of a lot of jokes when I edited it down. So.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, it had to be edited down mercilessly because it was looking to be about 3 hours long. I had to cut it way, way down, but it made it better.
Is it political?
Yes, it's very political, but it's not preachy, I promise.
So it's not didactic. Now, you've written a lot of political songs within the last 10 years, 20 years?
Yeah, 2016 kind of did it to me.
It did for a lot of people.
Yeah. But I'd say that, you know, there's much more of a humor bent. What I had the most fun with was with the lyrics being very pointed and very fun. I was kind of merciless with myself with every single line.
So how long do you think it took you from the beginning of the idea to the sort of polished product?
Well,
are you still polishing it?
March 2020 to tomorrow. The show is coming up very soon, so I have to, at some point, the script just and the songs just have to be there. But I started off using the songs from the review mm-hmm. and decided, well, I'll kind of just write a story around it. And then the story didn't involve very many of the songs. It grew into something very different. And I had to write, there's 20 songs on the score,
wow.
and I think only 5 of them are from the review at this point.
Now, you make a point to inform people, although COVID is in this production, it's not a COVID play.
No, who needs a COVID play, really? we're sick of it.
We're on to monkeypox now.
No, right. The next musical will be the monkeypox musical. No, it's about the cultural divides.
Oh,
in our
God.
Country, and what might come out of it. It's set on the first night of the pandemic, so that's the setting, but it really is not about that. It's really, you know, it's for people who are really concerned about what's going on, and if we don't come together, if we don't find a way forward as a country, we're doomed.
Now, this is going to have a public production when? We're going to have to say this several times throughout tonight.
It's going to happen on September 11th. Of
great. Good day.
I know that was the only, I have 8 cast members. It was the only night everybody could do.
Oh,
and
my
I thought,
God.
Oh, dear. But, yeah, it's easy to remember. It's September 11th at 7 p.m., and it's at the Unitarian Church of Medford, which is in Medford, Mass., in Medford Square.
And how can people get tickets?
Well, it's on www.eventbrite. Everybody knows Eventbrite, B-R-I-T-E.
Okay.
And all you have to do is go to www.eventbrite.com, and there's a little search area where it says search events, and all you have to do is put in an infinity of stars, Medford, Massachusetts, and it'll come right up.
Okay, we're going to repeat that again. I'm going to tell right now where we'll repeat it again just before the show ends.
Okay.
So if you didn't get it first time around, get it around the second time.
We want people to come and buy.
Is there a limit?
It's a pretty big church.
Okay.
And we are asking people to mask for this.
I noticed that. I thought that was great that you're doing that.
We don't want to be a spreader event. And, you know, so many people want to come who are immunocompromised. And so I decided that was the only way to go.
Also, we're not out of the COVID yet.
No, not at all.
I've had more friends now get COVID within the last couple of months than they did during the original.
Yeah. It just seems like it's everybody's going to get it at some point. But, you know, why invite it into the room? And we'll have some masks there if people forget. But the performers won't be masked unless they want to be. But we're asking the audience to do it. And then in the interval, everybody can go out in the parking lot and schmooze.
Now, as a singer, COVID must have been a triple threat to you.
Yeah. It was terrifying. I was more concerned about living or dying. I just had no idea whether I was going to survive it. There was no cure. There was no idea what was going to happen. So I wasn't really thinking about singing at that point. And then it was about 3 months of no.
Did it affect your voice?
Yeah, it did. Yeah. Yeah, I had to work really hard. That's where being a voice teacher came in really handy.
So you had exercises that you did
constantly?
Yeah, very
deep breathing and working on it every single day, being very proactive. But I know a lot of singers, there's on a lot of websites, vocal instruction, people are starting to work with, you know, people who had long COVID or severe COVID. It's affected a lot of singers.
Wow. Now I got to ask you what else is up, and we'll get back to. By the way, where did the title "Infinity of Stars" come from?
Oh,
it wasn't Carl Sagan. I know that.
No, it's it's. I kind of made it up. I think. I don't know.
Were you hallucinating while you were watching 2001: A Space Odyssey?
No, it just well, it did come from somewhere, but I'm kind of keeping that mum at the moment.
Really.
Yeah, but it's not...
You sly devil, you.
But I just want to keep, you know, I don't want anybody else to take it. But it seemed it was from the title song, and the song was something that got written between a couple of continents. It was the hardest song I've ever written. And
wait a minute, back up there. Whoa! Yeah. Between a couple of continents?
Sorry?
Between a couple of continents?
Yeah, I was. It started in Athens, Greece, when I was there.
I like how you just sort of breeze over these things like there was nothing.
Well, I was sitting on a rooftop of a hotel that used to have a lovely little bar up there, and there was nothing left there except a single chair.
Wow!
And I was sitting up while they're having a hard economic time.
Oh yeah, they are.
And so I was sitting up there, looking down at the city and all the smog, and there were a lot of stars out, and it just sort of popped into the head. And I thought, the whole concept of it came. But then I couldn't write it. So then I was in Hawaii a year later. And then it was a struggle, but it started to come. But I didn't have a bridge. And not until I happened to be in Salem for a meeting, and I went to the Hawthorne Hotel and just sat there, and I said, I'm not leaving until I get the bridge.
Can you force it like that?
Yeah, well, you end up rewriting it, but sometimes I have to force myself to do it or it doesn't get done.
I hope you don't mind me asking it, because I'm fascinated by songwriters and singers. and the skill of it, the art of it, again, is something that's not I have never experienced. And it seems very, very difficult. But it seems like people who write poetry is somewhat similar. So you have an idea and you wrestle with it sometimes for months or a year or more before you get something?
Yeah. Yeah, that one took a long time. Sometimes they just pop in and they're immediate. Some of the songs from the show were almost immediate. They have written in an afternoon, basically, and then just edited. But that one was a struggle, but it was a great struggle.
Now, is it always lyrics first, then music?
Yeah, and I write without an instrument, which I think is a little unusual. I tend to go off with a notebook and not use a piano anymore. And it's more interesting way to write rather than just kind of feeling around on the piano. So then I come back to the instrument later and figure out what the arrangement is. But, yeah, it always starts with a concept, and then the lyrics come around that concept.
And then music. Talk to me. Are you always writing for piano, or are you also, like, incorporating other instruments?
Generally, it's piano.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't have my calluses anymore, so I don't touch the guitar much.
Now, you have to explain that. Because for people who are longtime Massachusetts and Boston residents, you are a legend in your own time.
Oh, jeez. Really?
Yeah. You got to talk about your bands.
Okay. Well,
I have to ask you, because I loved those bands.
So did I. Oh, they were great memories, and we had so much fun.
And they were the bands, for people who don't know.
Yeah, D.D. Stewart and the Amplifiers, that's going way back. But that was my first real original band, and something I'd worked toward for a long, long time.
Were you always musically inclined when you were a child?
Yeah, that's all I ever wanted to do.
You wanted to write music and sing, or what?
Yeah, I was interested in music from the get-go. I was one of those kids who sat around and listened to classical music records on a little Victrola.
Were your parents musical?
They weren't musical at all, but they loved music. My mom was a Billie Holiday fanatic.
Wow.
And she'd seen Billie Holiday a couple of times. And so she had an old Victrola. She'd pile all her 78s on, and they would come crashing down. I still remember the sound when they crashed down on the turntable.
Wow.
But they both adored music, but neither of them were very musical.
Did you go to school in music?
I went to Berkeley very short.
And here you are.
And
here you are back at Berkeley as a
you hear that story a lot. I went to Berkeley for a couple of weeks and then I started my career. But then I came back to Berkeley and I've been there for 26 years, which I can hardly believe.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And you teach?
Yeah, and I love it.
Teach? That was a lead into what do you teach?
Okay. Well, a lot of private lessons. Which it varies what we do. It's not all technique. I love working with singer-songwriters, with young singer-songwriters, and they're constantly amazing me with what they write.
Now, when you start out with your bands like Dee Dee Stewart and the Amplifiers and later Girls' Night Out, those are sort of punky. And I'm saying that in an appreciative way because that's what I listen to.
Yeah, no, I love that too, and I loved it at the time. I thought that, you know, that music was like the second coming of everything I loved about 60s music, so I was totally into it.
But talk to me about the transition from that to a serious songster.
Oh, well, I was serious back then. I just wasn't that
You're right, and I take that back. I take that back. I apologize. I didn't mean to phrase it that way. But to me, like, you know, you're I don't want to say classical. You know, you're a serious singer right now, and you've been for decades. But there has to have been a transition between. And what was that like?
Well, I don't know, because I, you know, again, the 2015, 2016, that whole thing did a number on me. And I was looking for ways to write about it that wasn't writing protest music, you know. I think that...
Yeah, because that gets really didactic, and it's... And it gets predicted, you know, predictable. And not only that, it was like we were talking about doing a play about COVID would just be hammering you over the head.
It's like... Well, it's preaching to the converted. It doesn't do any good. I'd have to say that one of my proudest moments in my whole career was when we did the review. That was Cocktails with Fascists.
That's right.
Yeah. And somebody came up out of the audience and said, I'm a conservative, and I really enjoyed myself tonight. I didn't feel talked down to. So, well, that's great. That's exactly what I was trying to do, because if we don't have outreach. So, you know, in the 60s, I mean, folk protest writers like Phil Oakes and Buffy St. Marie, that was great and
it
still
was.
Is. It still speaks to our times. But I feel that people writing... trying to rewrite that stuff isn't going to work because it's a very different time. And if you look at what's really making an effect, the Colberts and people like that, that's what people are responding to. We need to laugh. We desperately need to laugh. And it relieves all that agony we're feeling.
But we still need content that has meaning. That's for me. I have a problem with a lot of the pop music, which just sort of seems. And I have nothing against dance at all. I think that's great. And raves, more power to you. But you do need some kind of content every once in a while.
Yeah. Well, luckily, I mean, being at Berkeley, I do hear. Well, certainly with my students, I hear that. I hear more interesting things coming from them than I hear on the radio.
Yeah.
But there's always good music. You just have to search for it.
And it's easier to search for it now, too. Is it difficult to make albums now as an artist?
Yeah, I gave up.
What was your last album? Was it No Love Songs?
Yeah, that was it. Well, you know, here I am about to do another project.
Well, I was going to say No Love Songs. Is got a lot of political content in it.
Yeah. It was
the subtitle was really... Laments for a Broken Society.
I know, it was pretty blatant. It was a lot of fun to do, and it's very rewarding.
It's a great record.
Just don't, you know, I look at the reason I'm sort of moving into musical theater, which is, this is very pop rock musical theater.
Okay.
It's not Brigadoon. But, I mean, there's nothing wrong with Brigadoon, but it's not traditional musical theater at all.
I like the fact that you had to apologize for Brigadoon.
No,
not that there's anything wrong with it.
There's nothing wrong with it. It's got chock full of great, timeless songs, as all those musicals are. But
come on, that's a weird musical.
Well, yeah, I don't know why I brought that one up, but it's set in Scotland, and I like Scotland, I guess.
I do too. Yeah. I'm of Scott
but
descent.
I think, you know, as I thought about it, musical theater is the album.
Mm-hmm.
We've lost the album. Everything is just singles and songs, and things have been dumbed down to that point. And if you're interested in long form, the musical theater. It gives you an opportunity to do that, to stretch out, and not only to write a whole score, but to write a script, which I did.
Talk to me about that. Was the first time that you wrote a script?
Well, I had done some screenwriting years ago.
For what?
And nothing ever got made, but...
it's a typical story.
I did win some semifinalist awards, so I'll brag about that. But
okay.
But, it all got sent out, but it's very hard to get anything made. But we did, I was part of something that did get a live reading. It was a company called Speak Previews, and I had one joke in the show that I was really fond of, and everybody laughed, and I think that led me to this, because it was such a high to hear people laughing at my joke.
Oh, I can imagine. That must be amazing. It must be amazing. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you miss performing for live audiences?
Yeah. Well, this will be fun. This will
I know.
Be great to
but
do.
Where's it going to go after this?
I don't know. I'm hoping that some super-duper energized manager type appears out of the woodwork and says, let me work with you, because I can't. I've already done the whole thing myself, and I'm exhausted. So just
now, other people are on stage, though.
Hmm?
Other people are on stage with you.
Well, there's seven characters, and
okay.
Some of them play dual characters, and so I'm one of the, you know, I'm the lead, I guess, but
okay.
Also the straight woman, and so I have a bunch of colleagues from Berkeley who are just absolutely sensational singers and actors, and I can't believe they're doing this, but they are.
Wow. Is somebody going to record this?
We have a grant.
Oh, nice.
I'm bragging again.
Of course.
Went for a Berkeley grant, and they very kindly gave it to me this year. And so we're going to a studio in Vermont for a week, free of charge, and we're going to record the cast album.
Now, how will that be distributed? How will people be able to see it if they can't see the live performance?
Well, I can't really afford at this point to do a complete CD release. I'm going to do kind of limited release for radio play.
Got it.
I think, and then see what happens, see if anything develops. But there are some radio stations who want to play it. So,
in its entirety, you could play individual songs from it. I would play it on my rock show.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Yeah.
I'll get you a copy.
I will. Please do. Now, we're going to be running out of time soon, so I want to make sure that we again talk about the date and how people can get tickets.
Okay. Well, just that lovely www.eventbrite, that's event, B-R-I-T-E,
.com.
And then just go to the homepage, and there's a little thing on the top that says search events. And just put in an infinity of stars and the location, Medford, Massachusetts, and it will come right up, and you can get tickets. And think of that you can see a Broadway show for $20. Not bad. A lot cheaper than Springsteen. Of course, he won't be there, but... But
I wasn't really expecting him.
I just want to mention the people who are in the show.
Yes, please do.
Lydia Harrell, sensational jazz singer, world class. They all are. Deb O'Ray, who is an incredible rock soul singer. People know Deb O'Ray because she's amazing. Renee Pfister, who's a major musical theater guy around the area. David Scott, who runs a fabulous songwriter in the round at the Somerville Armory, and he's a terrific performer.
Wow.
And I'm trying not to forget anybody. Cassandra McKinley, another fantastic jazz singer, and a non-Berkeley person, Will McMillan, who's a close friend, and the unbelievable orchestral Alison LaSance on piano.
Wow.
Who is Girls Night Out, my colleague from Girls Night Out.
Have you stayed friends ever since?
Oh, yeah. We've been working together ever since. She's amazing.
Now, I just realized you're the director of this, too, besides the writer.
Well, it's a reading, so it's not...
So, wait. Have you rehearsed?
Not all together, ever.
So this is going to be exciting on that night.
These guys, you know, they have full schedules between teaching and performing.
Yeah, I was going to say.
It hasn't been possible so far, so it's been small discussion groups. But we do have a complete run-through of both acts the week before the show.
Wow.
And then we'll know if it works or not.
Do you get nervous at all anymore?
I'm terrified. But I think
I find that
excited.
Hard to believe. You've done...
Well, this is new. I mean, to think that I've never acted before, and this is the first time that even though it's a reading, there's acting involved.
Yeah, but when I've listened to your albums, like No Love Songs, you put a lot of acting into your voice.
Oh, okay. I'll take that.
So it's not like it's a total stranger.
No, No, it felt very natural. You know, when I was little, my mom thought I was going to be an actress. So she's finally getting her wish many years down the line.
This sounds really, really exciting. So remember, it's 9/11, and yeah. then go to the website. Say it again.
www.eventbrite.com, and search the little search events at the top of the page for An Infinity of Stars, Medford, Massachusetts.
This ought to be good. Now, we're just to finish up. You know, I love reading biographies when I go to your website. And it talks about how your songs have been featured on Melrose Place, One Life to Live, and The Young. I love that. It's funny, but do you get paid a lot for that? If they
no.
feature? Oh,
are
you serious?
Yeah, they always manage to put it a second or two under for the getting money.
Oh, my God. Is that like 30 seconds or something like that? Or?
You know, I've gotten, it's always help. Even if you get a check for $27, it can be helpful.
Don't tell me it's been that low.
Yeah, it's been lower than that. But it's better than Spotify. Oh, and I want to say one more thing for people. Everybody's been asking if Trump is going to make an appearance in this musical. And he does make an appearance, but he's not seen and he's not heard and he definitely doesn't sing.
Okay, wait a minute. He's not seen, he's not heard, and he doesn't sing.
But otherwise, he does appear.
He's not seen.
And thank God he doesn't sing, huh?
Oh, my God. The mind boggles. We'll talk more about that off mic.
Okay.
Tonight's guest returning after too long a time. It's always a pleasure to talk to her.
It was so much fun. Thank you, Mark.
Recording artist, singer, and professor at Berklee College of Music, returning to her roots, Dee Dee Stewart. And we've been talking about An Infinity of Stars on 9/11. Dee Dee, best of luck. Break a leg. You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. Good night.
Our dreams come true.